This is the Soccer Know My podcast. I'm your host, Austin Long. You can follow me on Twitter at AustinLong1974. Make sure to check out the blog, Soccer Nomad, at soccernomad.wordpress.com. Finally, subscribe to the podcast on Podomatic or on iTunes. Just search Soccer Nomad. I appreciate all feedback, so please leave a rating and review. For this episode, I'm joined by Paul Gerald. Paul, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me back.
Okay, so Paul is a self-described soccer nut, and he was on the Soccer Nomad podcast at the beginning of the year to discuss his whirlwind trip to England over the holiday period. He's back on as he just completed another trip. So, Paul, why don't you hit the highlights of your last trip?
Well, let's see. I was over there just about, from September the 22nd to about the 4th or 5th of October, and saw six games. And for a change, this time I actually got to see some pretty good games. A lot of times I catch real stinkers. So I went to Bristol Rovers, a little League One club down in southwest England. Really cool town, Bristol. They got two teams, and I saw Bristol Rovers come from behind in the second half to beat a club called Port Vale that I've never heard of. Apparently they're the other team in Stoke, if that tells you anything. But then I went up to London and saw West Ham at their new stadium, the Olympic Stadium, which is beautiful. So that was a lot of fun, and met some people. The people I was sitting next to were a lot of fun to talk to. The West Ham is awful this year, and they got killed by Southampton, and the fans were kind of bitter, but it's a beautiful place. Saw a totally forgettable game at Nottingham Forest, although I really enjoyed Nottingham and that club, but it was a drab draw, as they would say, with Fulham. And then I saw an unbelievable game. I saw Newcastle at home to Norwich, where Norwich was up 3-1 with 10 minutes to go. And Newcastle got one, and it went into injury time, still 3-2. And in the 94th to 96th minutes, Newcastle scored twice and won 4-3. That was amazing. And then I saw Watford at home, pretty good game against who were they playing? Bournemouth. That was fun. And then I saw arguably the best game of the whole Premier League season so far. I splurged. I spent like $120 and saw Tottenham play Manchester City, that 2-0 game a couple of Sundays ago. It was amazing.
Yeah, so basically Paul and I's Twitter feed is me just writing hashtag jealous pretty much for his entire trip. Let's start with the Newcastle game. You were there, and I just couldn't believe, because you know I'm kind of following online, it's just happening, and all of a sudden it just goes to 4-3. What you're at St. James's Park, which of course, first of all, is this historic English venue. To talk about what was happening, it's 3-2. They're entering the last minutes. What is happening inside that stadium?
Well, first of all, I just could not be more impressed with Newcastle, a 52,000 seat stadium and a beautiful stadium. And I mean, right in the middle of the city. And this was a Wednesday night against Norwich, who brought almost nobody because it's like a 6-hour drive. There were 48,000 people there. And even when they were down 3-1, they were still singing. And, they told me it was a pretty mellow crowd, but I have not seen many crowds that rowdy, especially when they're down 3-1. They've been having a really good year, so there was a lot of confidence, but there were some folks that left early. There was a guy, even when they had got it to 3-2, I'd say quite a few people had already left or started leaving as the 90th minute approached. But Newcastle were still pressing, and the first goal kind of came out of nowhere. And so obviously it was a huge celebration, like, my God, we salvaged a point, and so that's all really exciting. But then you look up and there's 2 minutes to go, and the roar that came out of the crowd, it was just this like, come on, we can do this. And I'm not a Newcastle fan by any stretch, but I got swept up in it. And, it's one of these things where the last 5 minutes, everybody's on their feet, everybody's screaming, and they got another one and just lost it. I hate to think about the people that left with 5 minutes to go. I don't know why you would.
Right. You wrote a really good post on your blog that we'll talk about in a little bit. But, in terms of Newcastle, like you said, it's like right in the city. You took some really good pictures, and it looks like a really interesting setting. So staying in the Premier League, you went to West Ham. So I really want to get your thoughts on Olympic Stadium. I was I interviewed Tottenham Hotspur fans here in Atlanta, and there was a lot of talk. We spent a chunk of our interview talking about sort of like the new White Hart Lane, whatever they're going to call it, where it's sort of on top of the stadium, which is sharply contrasted by the Olympic Stadium, where it's a little bit farther away. Sort of talk about your first impressions.
Well, it's in an area of East London called the Docklands, which was just where all the docks were back in the day, and which is now being rapidly redeveloped with, you know, very planned out apartments and condominiums. And so it's kind of a sterile neighborhood in a lot of ways. Like, the historical stuff is all gone. So it's a lot of construction and a lot of, you know, obviously planned out new buildings and stuff. So it's not a neighborhood. It doesn't feel like a neighborhood. And then the stadium itself is actually on the grounds of where the 2012 Olympics were, which is like this epic space, you know, but it's also, you know, here's the swimming arena with like just park space and concrete all around it. And then over here is, you know, whatever, like, well, the football stadium. And then over here is the, you know, where the medal ceremonies were. So it's like this, I don't know, it's just this enormous space, and there's not really any community feel to it, you know. And there's like a, the kind of restaurant or cafe you would see in like a theme park or a zoo. That's like the only place nearby to get anything to eat and drink before the game. And it's like a 20-minute walk from the nearest tube station. So the whole thing is just, one of the things I really love about going to games over there is that so many of the stadiums are still in town. And even if they're kind of on the edge of town, it's still, you know, you're walking out there, you're taking the bus, and there's like a lot of atmosphere outside. This one is just this expanse of concrete. And once you're inside, it's a gorgeous stadium. I think it's got 55,000 seats. They pack it, even though they're terrible. You still have to have a membership and join a lottery to try to get tickets. But it's also like the crowd's kind of set back from the touchline, especially on the sides. So Upton Park, their old place, like, you were right on top of them. And most of the old grounds are like that, even the new ones when they're building them. But this one's like, I don't know, it's like it's round. And so you have a rectangle inside of a circle. You have a bunch of space between the touchlines. I guess I think they have great fans. And I suppose if the team was good, it would still be an intimidating place. But right now, it's just got nothing going.
And then you also mentioned that you went to Spurs against City. How was that?
The last day of my trip, Tottenham was at home against Manchester City, and I didn't need to go for my book. Like, I've done the research in that neighborhood. They're going to be in a new stadium anyway, but there were tickets available, and it was number 2 against number 3 in the Premier League, and I was like, I just got to go. So I threw down £90, which is about $120 or so, and it was just amazing. I mean, the stadium, it's always been one of my favorites because it's really fully enclosed. It's just two deck rectangle, basically. It's about 35,000 people and has always been really loud and really intense. And especially right now, Spurs are good. They got a young, energetic team. They play with a lot of pressure. The crowd is really into that. And they were playing Manchester City, which is, you know, most people's pick to win the league this year. And they had a lot of fans down there. Everything was there, and the game delivered. The Spurs won 2-0, but the atmosphere and the singing and the level of play, and I was actually sitting right behind one of the goals, and yeah, it was just an amazing atmosphere and experience all around. One of those things that, like, I would have regretted it if I hadn't gone. Like, screw the money, screw the research, I'm just going to be a fan today and go check it out, you know.
And one thing that, you know, I talked about with the Spurs group and you and I talked about was the fact that the corner, one of the corners is exposed as they build the new one.
Right. Yeah. They're building the new stadium is going to be kind of sideways to the current one and behind one end. I think it's the north end of the stadium, which is the one I was sitting in. So we actually entered the stadium through a construction zone. And as I was looking at the pitch, the corner of the stadium to my left is completely gone. They had to tear it out to put in, I think, part of a support of the new stadium. I'm not sure. But yeah, so like 20% of the stadium is gone. And next year, I don't know if your Spurs folks told you this, but that stadium's not going to be ready. And they don't even know where they're playing next year, but everybody suspects it'll be Wembley because that's also in North London where Tottenham is.
Yeah, we did talk about that. So they're doing the test run with the Champions League games this year. Then next year, it's everyone's understanding that the home games will be at Wembley. One trip that you did mention, and you wrote again a great post about, was your trip to Bristol Rovers. You mentioned in there that I guess Rovers had been to America in the 70s. Is that true?
Yeah, so I went to Bristol Rovers had in fact actually been not just to America but to Portland, Oregon back in the 1970s, which came up in a conversation at the club store because I was wearing my Timbers hat, and obviously the guy recognized my accent. He's like, "Oh, you're from America." We kind of went through this whole thing, and then he said, "You know, Rovers played in Portland back in the 1970s. They had gone in and they played." He's like, "Some other team in Florida." You know, maybe the something about Rowdy, and I was like, "Tampa Bay Rowdies," and he said, "Yes, that's right." And so, yeah, they went on a little tour of the U.S. back in the 70s. I have no idea how they wound up in Tampa Bay and Portland, but they did. And so that was a fun connection to have with the guy there.
And there's another American reference. You mentioned their pre-game, I don't know, their anthem music is the Rocky theme.
Yeah, they use that. That's fairly common. That's kind of what they play as the teams come out, and in my blog post, I have a video of the teams coming out. That's one thing I always take is a video of the teams coming out. Their actual anthem that they're known for, I think it's supposed to be from about the 60s or 70s when they were winning a game and the other team started, all their fans started leaving late in the game. The Rovers fans started singing this old song called "Good Night, Irene," and it stuck. And that to this day is their anthem. And it's funny. It's like a Leadbelly blues song from the 50s. And you got these fans in this 9,000 seat stadium in Southwest England singing it all in unison. It's kind of surreal. But you never know where these anthems come from. It's crazy.
Right. Let's talk about you, sort of your typical match day experience. Do you have any rituals or routines or things you like to do before each game?
The first thing I do, obviously, I go get my ticket. Sometimes they give you these print at home tickets, and I hate those things. So I will, you can take those over to the box office and exchange it for a real ticket. Or sometimes I'm just picking up my ticket, but whatever. So I make sure I got my ticket. Then what I do, I kind of check out the neighborhood, and I walk around looking for the pubs where the local fans are hanging out. And then I always walk one time all the way around the stadium. And then I will go in to the club shop, and every club over there sells a badge. It's basically like a lapel pin with the team crest or something on it. And those are usually either £2.50 or maybe £3, so like $4 or less. So I collect those, instead of scarves or something that's really expensive. And then I go in, and if there's any kind of local food specialty, I'll get that. Like in Birmingham, everybody said you got to get a Balti pie. And a Balti is a curry that was invented in Birmingham. You know, at Craven Cottage in London, the home of Fulham, they have what they call a Craven Cottage pie because there's a cottage pie that has mashed potatoes on top of it. And so there's Craven Cottage pie. So if there's a food specialty, I go for that. And then I try to have my seats with a good view of the away fans. I kind of plan ahead for that. And then I always film the teams coming out, sort of the big ceremony as the teams come out. And often the home team will have an anthem that they sing, like Rovers sings "Good Night, Irene." And of course, Liverpool is very famous for "You'll Never Walk Alone." And West Ham still sings "Blowing Bubbles." And so I try to video that. Although occasionally one of those videos gets blocked by YouTube, but some kind of a copyright thing, it's very annoying. I had this great video of last year from Leicester City. They've got a guy that stands at midfield as the teams come out and blows a fox hunting horn. So and everybody goes crazy, right? So I filmed that whole thing, and it got blocked by the league, came in and sat on it, and I couldn't put that video up. But that's the basic routine. And then after that, I film all corner kicks, just in case somebody scores. And, I try to get some good video, especially of the away fans, and get that on my YouTube channel.
Absolutely. So all these go into your blog posts, and now your blog posts are turning into a book. So let's talk about that. Paul's upcoming book's going to be called An American's Guide to Soccer in England. Sort of talk about your book, the reasons for writing it, some tips for fans, that sort of thing.
Sure. So the first reason for writing it is just I've always loved to travel and write, and I love soccer, and so I kind of put those things together, and I the book is essentially a nuts and bolts, like, so you want to watch a soccer game or a bunch of games in England, here's how it works. Here's a profile of each club. Here's how to get tickets. Here's where you want to sit in the stadium. Here's where you want to eat and drink before the game. Here's the songs you're going to be hearing, all this kind of stuff, just to literally take the reader by the hand and walk them into the experience. And the idea is also, like, even if you're not going to go to a game, if you're watching at home, you can kind of know more of what you're looking at. And so sort of a travel and cultural guide. And the reason to do it, for one thing, is because I love to write. But it's also, I mean, nobody's ever written a book like that. And so there's an opportunity there, I think. And also on the end of the book, which should come out next summer, I hope to have it come out every summer and kind of update it for each season, because take account of promotion and relegation and as I get to more clubs. So another reason for writing the book is there's also a business opportunity I have found where I can act as a consultant, almost a travel agent, and one day maybe a guide for people who want to go to England or they're to watch games, or they're already in England and they want to catch a game or two. Like, I get emails almost weekly from somebody who is like, we're a family of four and we're going to be in England for the holidays, and my 12-year-old really loves Chelsea or whatever and wants to see a game. I don't know anything. How does this work? And for right now, I've been answering these questions for free. All I ask is, when you get done, can you write something up and take some pictures, and I'll put it on the blog. But eventually what I want to start doing is saying, well, you know, for a small fee, I'll jump on the phone with you, talk through your whole trip and what you want to do, and then I'll go through and look at the schedule and see who's playing who and kind of make some suggestions for the games that I think you ought to concentrate on, and then give you all the other information that's in the book. You know, here's the history of the club. Here's how to get tickets. Here's where you want to sit. Here's where to eat and drink before the game. Sort of put together custom itineraries for people. And then maybe one day actually have a guide service where, like, I'll show up at your hotel and take you around and show you the sights, introduce you to fans, and then go to the game with you. That's down the road.
So moving on to sort of the nuts and bolts of the book, you know, right now on the blog, you have a list of clubs, and as you go to the venue, you know, you sort of hyperlink and people can read about particular venues. But one thing that you've been focusing on is hubs as a way to maximize your trip. Why don't you sort of walk listeners through that?
Yes, you probably know, and maybe your listeners do too, but there's 92 professional clubs all around the country. And so what I've done is, I'm not going to get to all 92, but I've divided them all up into regions. And with the idea being, some people will use this book to, like, have a soccer-based holiday. And or they know they're going to be in Manchester for a few days and they want to catch a game. So for each region, I sort of designated a hub city that's pretty central and also interesting and fun to stay in. So, you know, I mean, London is obviously, you know, I think there's I think there's 10 professional and 2 pretty high amateur teams in London. Actually, I take it back. There's 16 of those, if you include Wembley Stadium. And the outskirts, like within an hour or two train ride of London, is another 12. So London's an obvious hub, right? Then I divided up, like, you got 4 teams on the south coast near Brighton, which is a really cool beach town. So there's your hub. In the southwest and the southern part of Wales, the city of Bristol, southwest of London in a couple hours. Great city, really interesting, and there's 10 clubs around there within an hour or so train ride. So you got Birmingham for the West Midlands. There's 11 teams right around there. East Midlands, I use Nottingham as the base, all the Robin Hood stuff, and it's a really cool tourist area. There's 6 clubs within like a 45-minute train ride from there. And then Yorkshire, which is kind of further east and a little north, I'd probably use Leeds or maybe Sheffield as the base. There's 13 clubs in Yorkshire. Obviously, Liverpool or Manchester are both kind of the hub for the Northwest. I mean, those two cities are only 30 miles apart. And in the greater Liverpool, Manchester area, there are 19 professional clubs within an hour to an hour and a half train ride. And then Newcastle, which I went to on this last trip for the first time, which is a fantastic city. And there's half a dozen clubs up around there as well. So that's the idea. You divide the book into region and then have a hub city for each region.
Perfect. And, you know, your blog has a lot of stuff already about tips for travelers, you know, tickets, travel, best times to go. Talk about last time you were on, we talked a little bit about the ticketing, about how, you know, in some cases you have to buy, you know, become a member of the club so you can have access to the tickets. Because English football is much different than American sports in terms of home and away ends and all that sort of thing. But but for this one, talk about you wrote a post recently about best times to go. Sort of, you know, flesh that out. And so, if, you know, if people are, like you say, want to take a holiday or really get bang for their buck, what are some things that they should be looking for?
Yeah, what I do, a typical trip for me is I get to London usually on a Friday and I stay through the following weekend. So what I'm always looking for is give me 2 weekends where I know there's going to be league games on both of those weekends. So in other words, don't go during an international break or something. But also look for a week when there's going to be games during the week. And usually that is the lower leagues. Because the championship, you know, they play 8 more games during the season than in the Premier League. In fact, all the League One, League Two, and the championship, they all have 24 teams. So there's another 8 games. So they're often playing during the week. So I look for those weeks where either the lower leagues are playing or, like, the next time I go back, there's going to be the first weekend I'm there is the first weekend of the FA Cup, which is when the League One and League Two teams all go in. So, and that they'll stretch that out from Friday to Monday. So that's going to be 4 nights or days when there could be a game, you know, and then there's Europa League during the week. And then there's all the leagues play the following weekend. So what I do is I look for what's the, like you said, bang for your buck, right? How can I go? A typical trip for me is that I'll be there 10 days and see 6 or 7 games. But you can't just pick any 10 days to do that. So I look at the league schedules. I look at the FA Cup schedules. I look at the League Cup schedule and really just kind of, you know, pick half a dozen times during the year. Like the first 2 weekends of November are always really great, or the holidays are really great because they play a bunch of games. Everybody plays on Boxing Day. Everybody plays New Year's Day. And then the first weekend in January is when the Premier League and Championship clubs go into the FA Cup. So that's when you see Manchester United going to Gateshead, you know, or you see, you know, some club like Swindon Town that you can't even find on a map, but they're playing at Liverpool. I mean, these kind of magical things happen, especially in the first round of the FA Cup. So just kind of knowing when that kind of stuff is happening and planning accordingly, because if you're going to go to watch soccer, you want to make sure there's a lot of good games to choose from.
Yeah, you hinted that you've got another trip in the works. Do you have any specifics, like time, games, or are you just sort of in the playing stage?
I'm leaving. Let's see, the next one, I leave November the 3rd, which is a Thursday, so I get there on Friday the 4th. I think I have those dates right. But that weekend, the Premier League and Championship are playing, and there's the first round of the FA Cup, so that's League One and League Two going in. And this next trip, I'm really going to stay in London for the whole time. So that first weekend with the FA Cup, I think there's 7 or 8 games in London, in Greater London, that weekend just in the FA Cup. So in some of those, I mean, there are full-on amateur teams that are still in the Cup. So you literally have, you know, guys that have a full-time job and play in their club soccer on Saturday or Sunday, and they get to go play at Millwall or something, you know. So there's that kind of stuff that's going on. And so I'll have a weekend of that. And then during the week, I actually have some business stuff for my travel business. There's a big travel show in London that week. But then there's also some lower league games during the week. So I'm going to go see Barnet, which is a little tiny club in North London. I don't even know anything about them yet, but I'm going to go see them. And,
Edgar Davies used to either play or own them. Oh, yeah. So okay. Keep an eye out for that. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Keep going.
Yeah. Well, so, and then the following weekend, this is actually really cool. The following weekend, I typically tell people don't go during an international break, but I'm going during international break for a couple of reasons. One, because I want to see this first round of the FA Cup. Also because the lower leagues, League One and League Two, they don't take a break for international play because the guys are international players. But that following weekend on Friday night, I've already got a ticket for this, is a World Cup qualifier, England versus Scotland at Wembley Stadium. And me and my buddy in London have already got tickets to that. And I don't care how crappy those teams are, England and Scotland playing in a World Cup qualifier has got to be something to be excited about. So that's the second weekend of my upcoming trip.
Oh my God, that's so cool. So are you going to go to that game and then find a bar to watch US-Mexico, or have you thought that far ahead?
I have not thought that far ahead. I don't even remember what day US-Mexico is.
It is November 11th, so let's okay, see. So the England game will probably be at 2:45 our time, and the US game will probably be 7 or 8 our time, so be up late. It'd be a long day, but
yeah, that's going to be, that means the U.S. is probably kicking off at about 2 a.m. London time. So we'll see.
You know. Okay.
I'm not making any promises.
Very good.
I'll take my U.S. scarf though, and maybe I'll wear it to the England Scotland game and see if I can get in any trouble.
Okay. Very good. So again, Paul's book is American's Guide to Soccer in England. I'm gonna put all this in the show notes. His blog is EnglishSoccerGuide.com, and you can follow him at the same Twitter address. Again, the blog is a great resource for sort of travel logs, his most recent trips. There's lots of pictures and information. It's not just about soccer. Like he said, there's a lot of cultural and geographic information that fans can use to, you know, learn more about where all these games are happening. So you said you're planning to have the book out summer of 2017?
Yep, and if it works, if I don't go broke, I'll keep updating it every year. So yeah, it'll be a every new edition for every season. But sometime in summer of 2017, it'll come out.
Awesome. So again, my guest has been Paul Gerald. His upcoming book is called An American's Guide to Soccer in England. It's, if you're a groundhopper, a soccer fan, a traveler, this is going to be a book for you. There's tons of great information. And Paul, I just want to thank you for taking some time and sharing all your insight.
Hey, well, thank you. It's always fun to come on. I appreciate it.
Okay, talk soon. Thanks for listening to the Soccer Nomad Podcast. Let me know what you think by commenting on the Podomatic page or giving the show a review and rating on iTunes. And help me spread the word by sharing this podcast with a fellow soccer fan. You can follow me on Twitter at AustinLong1974, and please visit my blog, soccernomad.wordpress.com, for posts on kits, memories, and more. Thanks again.